we're blessed in many ways to work here, and we are blessed by 130 or 40 and a growing number of people who make this truly the place to work that it is. One of the things we are blessed with is a handful of people, a number of people whose quiet presence, whose quiet leadership has a calming, almost subtle influence on us without us even knowing it. We are blessed this morning to have one of those people sharing with us. Jim Friedrichs is going to talk to us a little bit about his journey with Link, about what it's like to be a Link staff coordinator. He's been a Link staff coordinator since 2005. He supervises, we think it's difficult to supervise maybe 8 people in one place. He supervises people in 8 different countries. And he's going to talk to us this morning about his experiences and a little bit about the process of change that staff go through as they live in and experience a cross-cultural experience. Jim Friedrichs.
The title of my talk is Link in Transition, and you may automatically think that I'm going to talk about the transitions that Link is going through right now. And that's going to be part of it, but that's not really what I want to focus on. As Steve mentioned, I really want to look at the transition process that we go through as individuals. At the ONS open house 3 weeks ago, one of the new staff that came through, we were talking and describing what we do, and the staff person said, well, what's your favorite part about your job? And that question caught me short. As I thought about it, I realized my favorite thing is helping people in the process of transition. It's not about travel. It's not about even about missions. It's about helping people do transition. And so this morning, that's what I want to look at and focus. Also, the subtitle, a couple of weeks ago, Becky talked about the world being too big. So I'm using the subtext, the world, when the world feels too big. Her title was when the world is too small. When you're in transition, often the world feels like it's too big. It's too much. You can't handle everything that's going on. And there's just more than you can cope with at any given time. And that is often our experience for any one of us when we go through a process of transition, whether it's moving from one place to another, whether it's going through a grief process when someone has passed away and you're dealing with that. Everything just feels too big. It's out of control. And you don't know how to handle that. Just a little bit of background about myself to give you some context of who I am. I am the youngest in a family of missionaries. In fact, my mother was a missionary kid in Korea, and I'm a missionary kid from Nepal. My dad is a medical doctor, and he lived and worked in China, India, and Nepal, and a couple other places since. But that's a picture of me as a little guy. Grew up in Tansen, Nepal, and that's where we served as missionaries. I went to school in India at Woodstock School in North India. It's a boarding school. And so my early school years, part of the year I was away at boarding, part of the year my mom came and took us out of boarding and rented a house on the hillside, and so we lived back and forth. Meanwhile, my dad was in Nepal doing mission work, so there was a lot of backing and forthing for all of us as kids. After high school, even in the midst of high school, my parents came to the U.S. and we lived in a number of places in the U.S. on furloughs, and then they settled in Kentucky. So I went to part of my high school in Kentucky, went to college in Tennessee, where Diane and I met, Maryville College in Tennessee. And then I finished my undergraduate work in Kentucky at the University of Kentucky. And then we both felt a call to go to missions, and so in preparation for that, went to graduate school at Virginia Tech in Blacksburg, Virginia. So I've lived in a number of places, actually counting it up. Now that's not the end of my story, but counting it up, I've lived more of my life outside the United States than I have inside the United States. And 10 different locations in the USA and 5 different locations outside the USA. So I'm a bit mixed up. Let me go back just so that doesn't happen again. In college, my only other interaction with InterVarsity was going to Urbana 87. We went about a year and a half before I finished my PhD. And it was at that Urbana that I was challenged to consider teaching as a vocation of ministry, of missions. And specifically at that Urbana, I met an African from Kenya who was doing his PhD work in Illinois, and he invited me to go teach at his university in Kenya. And so I applied, and we went, and I taught for 2 years at Njoro University, Egerton University in Njoro, Kenya, and which is an agricultural school. I taught soil science, which is my specialty. And then we came back to the U.S. for 4 years, lived in Nebraska, and then finally went to Tanzania in 1995, where Diane and I and our family lived for 9 years, where I taught at University of Dar es Salaam in the botany department, and Diane taught soil science, and Diane taught at a Christian school teaching second grade with lots of people. I'm not sure why this is cycling, I'm sorry. Living in Tanzania is a cross-cultural experience, of course. We were there for 9 years. We were also involved in a Bible study fellowship class, and so that was our actual ministry was in and means my means of being there was a university job. My ministry was the Bible study fellowship men's class, and Diane was in the women's class. 9 years. All our children went to high school there and graduated from high school there and came back. And after 9 years, we felt that it was time for us to come back to the States too. Actually, in the process of coming back, about a year before we left Tanzania, we were in some really critical team situations where our team went through some real difficult struggles. One of our team members' daughter suddenly died here in the U.S., and they had to leave within just a couple of days, and never actually were able to go back to Tanzania because of that situation. Our church fell apart, just a number of things came back. So when we did come back to the U.S., we were ready to be here. We were ready to leave a very, a strenuous situation, and actually we were burnt out. And so we came back to the U.S. Looking for something else, anticipating. I was anticipating a teaching job, so I applied to some 50 different schools and universities and didn't find anything. Finally, I gave up on that, and it was when I gave up on my teaching that an opportunity opened up. I saw the job application or the announcement for a link staff coordinator in InterVarsity. Of course, so that was my second encounter with InterVarsity. It's nice to know that there is a large ministry presence here in Madison, Wisconsin. I had no idea at the time, and it was interesting to find that when we were looking for that. That was the other desire that I had when we came back. I wanted to find a way in which I could serve staff, serve missionary staff who were going through situations that in normal context of mission life and receive the kind of care that we didn't get when we were living overseas. How could I do that? And looking at the job description and meeting Becky and understanding, talking with Jen when I came to apply, just understanding the job and Renee as well, I realized that this is the fit that I was looking for. This is the opportunity to provide care for staff that live in cross-cultural situations, that work in those kinds of living situations. It was during orientation and preparation for orientation that I first came across this graphic, which is a typical explanation that we have in InterVarsity for people that are going in either short-term or long-term ministry in cross-cultural settings. Some of you may be familiar with this, some are not. The progression is from your left across. You start out in your own situation, you come across a cultural difference, and that difference creates feelings that may be frustration, anger, interest, adaptation, what have you, different kinds of emotions come out of that. And then we have choices of how we're going to deal with that conflict, that difference, that dissonance that we feel inside ourselves. The green line, of course, is understanding and learning and that approach to having a good outcome. the red line being a critical response to differences and not responding to that. We all go through this. Whether you move from Texas to Wisconsin, whether you move from one job to another job to into this organization, we all go through that whenever we enter a new cultural situation. And cultures, you know, cultures are as subtle as the culture of InterVarsity itself, or the culture of the South versus the North, or the culture of the United States versus Tanzania. Wherever it is, we go through these kinds of cultural adaptations, and how we deal with those is a mark of kind of who we are in a way, and how open we are to processing and learning and dealing with change. There's a quote that I found from a book by Nancy Houston. Nancy Houston is a writer that lives in France, in Paris, I think. But she's from Canada. She learned French, and she writes in French. And so she has a perspective of being an expatriate living in a different culture. Expatriates are consciously and often painfully aware of a number of truths which, unbeknownst to others, shape the human condition in general. One of these truths is the absolute unique nature of childhood and the fact that it never leaves you. No expatriate can be oblivious to this fact, whereas it's quite possible for the impatriates, those who live within their culture, to go through and live with a reassuring illusion of continuity and self-evidence. If you're not exposed to something that's different, then that child, your childhood experiences are never exposed as being different from everybody else's. But it's when you are transplanted to a new location, a new place, then your own experiences, your own assumptions about life and how things should work are exposed. Your childhood comes along with you. That's why I showed you pictures of my childhood. You know, that's not why, but in terms of you getting to know me. And we all do this. We talk about where we came from and who we are, and part of that is your childhood experience. And so that's part of who we are and how we change. She illustrates this with the idea of a fruit. Childhood is like the stone in the heart of the fruit. The fruit doesn't become hollow as it grows. The fruit grows, matures, and the flesh swells, becomes soft, and, you know, shrivels up eventually. But the stone is still there. The fruit is still there. We all have these inner accumulations, these parts of us that are never going to go away. That's part of who we are. And that's just part of being a person. Another way of looking at our personhood is described by Margaret Silf, who's a spiritual director from England. And she takes the same idea, but puts it in terms of concentric circles. So the outer circle is labels it where I am. So it's our interaction with our environment and our understanding of ourselves in terms of where we are and how we interact with that. The next circle inside that is how I am. And this deals with our emotional response to our environment. So when we move from one environment to another, emotions come out, and we deal with those in emotional terms. And then inside that is who I am. And this is more the core, the child within us, the core experiences that we have that shape us. And so as we go through a cross-cultural experience, that last image I showed you where we have a conflict, that's where we cross over from the where I am into the how I am. Experience. Some of that where I am has changed, and so how I am, how I react, how things are impacting me changes. But there's another curve, another explanation of this that goes even deeper into kind of the who I am part of it. This is the U curve of transition that we use to talk about the experience of moving from one culture into another culture, the adaptation process as you go into another culture. I didn't mean to do that. So this line is the length of time that you're in a given location or culture, and then your level of satisfaction being high or low. And so we actually start out over here feeling good about where we are. I'm in my own environment, so everything is good. And then as you move to a new environment, you start to go through this depression and cycle of having, initially when you go to Mexico for the first time, it's lots of fun. It's, you know, you're as a tourist, you know, things are going great. But then as you stay there longer, you don't appreciate the culture, you don't like the language, the food is starting to get old, and actually things just don't work the way they're supposed to work. Nothing is the same. I hate it here. Life is terrible. But eventually, you get through that, and you learn to appreciate the culture, you learn to appreciate the language, you learn to appreciate the differences that people have. And so you recover from that, and finally you end up in a bicultural situation, bicultural status. I can live in Wisconsin and I can live in Virginia. I've been in both places, I can adapt, I can go back and forth between the two. We all go through this. Anytime we go through a struggle or a transition process, I think this shows moving into that deeper part of the self, the inner one, the who I am, where you get down in this part and you're really starting to wonder who am I? Every context that I'm, all my points of reference that I'm used to don't work anymore. And so now I'm starting to really understand what it is that I really value, what it is that I really think about myself and about my culture and those places that I live. We have the privilege and link of having a psychologist and spiritual director who meets with us when we do orientation and debriefing for our staff. And he's the one who helped us, helped me and Diane particularly, go through this process for ourselves as we came back into the U.S. And just listening to him and helping, listening to his understanding of this transition process and how we go through it, helped me normalize my experience to coming back to the U.S. And he just recently gave me a new insight into this in terms of relating it right back to Scripture and how the Scriptures exemplify this material, this information. I'll pull some Psalms just to illustrate that. Psalms of lament and Psalms of ascent. So lament is going down, ascent is climbing up. From Psalm 77, listen to the progression of this person as a as they go down into this pit. I cried out to God for help. I cried out to God to hear me. When I was in distress, I sought the Lord. At night, I stretched out untiring hands, and I would not be comforted. I remembered you, God, and I groaned. I meditated, and my spirit grew faint. You kept my eyes from closing. I was too troubled to speak. I thought about the former days, the years of long ago. I remembered my songs in the night. My heart meditated. My spirit asked, will the Lord reject forever? Will he never show his favor again? Has his unfailing love vanished forever? Has his promise failed for all time? Has God forgotten to be merciful? Has he in anger withheld his compassion? This guy's in the pit. He's right there in the bottom. And it's, you know, his understanding of who he is and his relation to God is just going from one place where he understands God into a low place where you're questioning God and God's compassion, God's love for you. Isn't that typical of us when we're going through a depression, when we're going through a questioning period, particularly grieving? This is particularly, I think we all relate to this in a grieving situation. Now listen to Psalm 20, which is the first of the Psalms of Ascent. I call on the Lord in my distress, and he answers me. Save me, Lord, from lying lips and from deceitful tongues. What will he do, and what more besides you, deceitful tongue? He will punish you with a warrior's sharp arrows and with burning coals of the hot broom bush. Woe to me that I dwell in Meshech, that I live among the tents of Kedar. Too long have I lived among those who hate peace. I am for peace, but when I speak, they are for war. Here he is. He's down here, and he's starting to be hopeful and looking upwards. Psalm 121, I lift my eyes to the mountains. Where does my help come? My help comes from the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth. He will not let your foot slip. He who watches over you will not slumber. Indeed, he who watches over Israel will neither slumber nor sleep. And there's more to that, but I'm skipping over to Psalm 131. My heart is not proud, Lord. My eyes are not haughty. I do not concern myself with great matters or things too wonderful for me. But I have calmed myself and quieted my ambitions. I am like a weaned child with its mother. Like a weaned child, I am content. Or another version says, my soul is like a weaned child. I am content. Israel, put your hope in the Lord, both now and forevermore. There you see the picture of the child, the weaned child. And I think this really is part of exposing our soul and understanding who our soul is and what our soul is inside of us. And it's like a weaned child. It's like a child that finally is content. And he's coming up through this and is learning to trust God, learning that God, yes, I've gone through something really difficult, and yet God is able to hold me content me, or give me compassion. Those are the things that I've learned in the process of transition. Those are some of the things that we teach to our staff as they go through the orientation and the debriefing process. It's interesting that this is what we show them when they're thinking about going overseas, but in the orientation process, we also teach them about reentry, and we say, you know, what happens? You're going to live up here in this nice place for a long time until it's time to come back, and then you're going to go through this again, and guess what? It's worse. Coming back to the U.S. is harder than going overseas in the first place. And so we try to help them normalize the experience and give them an understanding that it's not just a human psychological experience, but it's a scriptural. This is something that God leads us through and brings us out of on the other end. Orientation 205 was the first time that I learned this and had to teach it, and since then we've done more. 2006, our class. 2007, the people in the circle are the class. 2008 and 2009. You'll notice one thing about these pictures. Every year there's less and less. We are, for some reason, we're experiencing fewer and fewer new staff going into Link. And this is something that I'll ask you to pray about later if we have some time. But so this is something that we, every year, work with the staff and help them understand and help them just adjust to the things that are coming ahead for them. InterVarsity is part of IFES, the International Fellowship of Evangelical Students. And as part of the IFES, we are also part of the changes that are taking place in IFES. In 2007, at the World Assembly, Daniel Bourdonnais was installed as the new General Secretary of IFES. And this is the vision that they've come up with as an organization for IFES in general. Now, IFES, understand, is an international fellowship of organizations just like InterVarsity in 155 countries around the world. So all these countries have their own movement, their own group of students that they are working with, and their own staff that work with these students. In some countries, there's a lot of staff, like here. In some countries, there's one staff. And in other countries, there are no staff, and that's in a pioneering situation, and there are people that are trying to establish something there. Up until 2007, the focus of IFES was growth and trying to establish more movements around the world to reach out to more countries, and now there are only like 18 countries around the world that do not have student movements within them. These are countries that have universities. There are countries where both of those don't exist. So that part of the growth of IFES is over, essentially. There's a few more countries to establish movements in. But now Daniel is saying, really what we need to focus on is expanding the structure of IFES to make it stronger and more able to care for the students that are there and the staff that talk to those students, that lead those students. So this is the initiative. Notice that the main part of the initiative is that it's student-led, student-run, and alongside that are structures that help the students to reach out to other students and grow the organization. Students built into communities of disciples transformed by the gospel and impacting the university, the church, and society for the glory of Christ. Sounds familiar, doesn't it? Our vision is to see students and faculty transformed, campuses renewed, and world changes developed. We are part and parcel of IFES. We have the same kind of vision, and that's why we, Link, send people overseas to work with IFES. We want to support internationally the work of student ministry in other countries, and so that's really what Link is all about. IFES is receiving part of that. We send staff to work in movements in different countries, and so a few years ago we had staff that went to Canada, and Bob and Debbie Clark worked with InterVarsity Canada for 4 years, and then they've come back to the U.S. since then. We have staff that work in Moldova, and there's a very small movement in Moldova, but the Van Horens are part of that movement. They work under the leadership of that movement, and also Kevin also has a job of, as part of IFES, training the leader of that movement. So for a while he was training his own supervisor to supervise himself, which is a real difficult thing to do. But that's how we work, that's how we send staff. The vision of Link itself is to send staff outside the U.S. to reach more students in more places with greater impact through the IFES. We send our staff not to go do student ministry on their own, but to do it under the leadership of the national movement in the IFES. These are some of our staff. I'm not going to introduce all of them, but while you're looking at these pictures, I do want to introduce a few people that are here in the office. So if Renee and Becky could stand up. Renee is Link staff coordinator like myself. She supervises staff in Europe. And one staff used to be in Canada, now in the U.S. And she supervises about half the staff. Becky Levy is our financial administrator. She works part-time with us and just helps organize expense reports and budgets and helps us keep track of finances. And lately, she's picked up a lot of other responsibilities as well. So thank you. I appreciate working with both of these ladies. It's been my pleasure. Diane, I'm not going to make you stand up, but Diane is also a volunteer with Link. She helps out with conferences, and those of you who don't know, Diane is my wife. When we have orientation and debriefing, she often will come along and provide either childcare for those with children, training for the children to go through some of this process themselves, and also other ways to just help us out as a group. And right now, our acting director is Jim Tebby. I won't make you stand up either, but he's serving as our director of Link as we go through a process of thinking about what it is we want to do, how we want to transform in the immediate future. It's not obvious that we're going to bring in a new director. We want to evaluate that and see if that's what we want to do, and then how we can grow in Link to serve both InterVarsity and the IFES in the best way possible. Staff in China, in Asia, Central Asia, staff in the Middle East, and Turkey, in Africa, staff in Eurasia and Europe, staff in Europe, and South America. Right now, Link has staff in 18 countries. Yeah, I need to see Mike. We have staff in 18 countries. We have 38 Link staff that are staff employees. There are a few spouses that are volunteers and a few that are non-volunteer spouses. And in those families, there are 32 children. So not only do we care for the staff, but we also have a mind for the care of the children and what they need to do as well. Since 1986, 264 Link staff have served in over 900 ministry years overseas. We've served in 46 different countries around the world. And currently there are 34 former Link staff that are still within InterVarsity. I think it's 35 now. and many of them are in ministry leadership positions at the RD and other senior leadership levels. So it's not just sending people out and then they disappear, but this is having benefits for Rand University as well. I'm going to ask you to just be mindful of these things to pray for. I don't think we'll stop now, but just, and these are obvious things that I think you'll be able to remember, but as you think of Link, think of these several categories. There are two staff units, one is a couple and then one single guy, who are preparing to go overseas now. They want to get into their countries by August. So they have a lot of fundraising and networking to do that. We also have several staff in the U.S. right now doing fund development, some with deficits that they need to care for, and some that are just building and rebuilding those networks that they have. There are a few staff also who are in the process of transition. There's a couple who have just left that are starting ministry in new situations, either inside IFES or outside InterVarsity and IFES. So just pray for those. We won't name them, but just pray for those people in the transition process. There's even a few that are thinking about marriage and what that entails, and how they'll do ministry then. And then pray for us as an office staff as we consider our next steps. We're going through a process with Jim Tebbe in terms of evaluating that. And then, so we just ask your prayers that we would have wisdom in how to do that and how to move forward. So with that, thank you. Good.